Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons, from the magic of the multiverse to mismanaged markets. And today we're talking about Myconids.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
It's back to the Underdark again today.
Another. This is the top or bottom layer of the bread of our Underdark sandwich.
Yeah, that I apparently put together unwittingly.
Accidentally created an Underdark sandwich.
I did.
We will worship these three episodes and they will become a god.
Indeed. So in Dungeons & Dragons, Myconids, also known as Fungus Ones, Fungus Folk, or Fungus Men, are a race of ambulatory fungus creatures that dwell deep in the Underdark.
Fun guys.
They're very fun.
God,
guys.
I tried so hard not to make that joke for like the last two episodes, and here it is.
Here it is. You couldn't make it through the third one.
Nope. Too much mushroom stuff, not enough jokes.
Yeah, they are an intelligent, sentient species known for their extreme isolationalism and their search for enlightenment.
Oh shit.
They abhor all violence as a general rule, with the exception of self-defense, though they aren't necessarily good beings. Instead, the Myconids are an odd form of lawful neutral, and the moral spectrum of good versus evil doesn't quite apply to them. All in all, they are cautious creatures that live peaceful lives. Myconids have no desire to conquer anybody and would prefer to just be left alone.
So we covered neutral evil mushrooms. And then we covered true neutral mushrooms, which were just food, in the Kuotoa episode.
Right.
And sure. Now we're talking about lawful neutral mushrooms.
That's one way to look at it.
Three scope of neutral, triple scope of neutral mushrooms.
Right.
It's a mushroom sandwich.
Right. Okay. I'm glad you got your sandwich joking twice now.
Mushrooms and fish.
So Myconids most closely resemble walking toadstools in human form. They're an odd amalgamation of mushroom and other types of fungi with the vague shape of humanoid proportions.
So this is Toad from Mario Kart.
Except for if Toad was all mushroom.
I think, oh yeah, because Toad's not, he's just wearing a mushroom cap.
Yeah.
It's not actually a mushroom at all.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Is that?
I'm pretty sure. Okay, yeah. There's like photos of him without his little cap.
Oh, okay. But even then, like, I'm talking about the rest of his body as well.
All mushroom, all the way down.
All the way down. Yeah. Okay. So the upper half of their body splits into a pair of arms below their caps, and their lower half divides into a pair of legs at the stump. Each extremity is pudgy and broad, with their hands ending in two stubby fingers and a thumb.
Oh.
Their feet hosting numerous vestigial toes.
Okay.
Their flesh is perfectly concealed. Oh no, their flesh is bloated and spongy and varies in color from purple to gray. Two eyes rest on the lower portion of their caps and are perfectly concealed against the rest of their spongy skin when shut. If a Myconid stood very still and closed its eyes, it could easily be mistaken for simply a giant mushroom. They range in height from 2 to 12 feet tall, depending on their age.
Okay, so they're just the perfect blend of cute and gross.
Kinda, yeah, and really it depends on the art too, because like the fourth edition art, they're real fucking gross.
Oh,
the
okay.
Fifth edition art, they're mostly gross, but they look kind of nice.
Okay,
and the second edition art I saw, they look kind
of
cute.
I feel like they try to make the art reflect the kind of intent of the
creature.
Yeah,
you know, so you can judge by just looking at them, I suppose.
I guess they want you in D&D to make perception checks to judge books by their cover.
Indeed. So
don't fail those checks.
Myconids are unique amongst the Underdark races for their complete aversion to violent behavior. We have talked about the Underdark quite a few times on the show, and it is generally full of things trying to kill anything else they meet at all times, including drow, illithids, beholders, Kuotoa, Darrow, Duergar, and many other violent creatures.
Okay.
So because of this fact, Myconids have a deeply ingrained general distrust of entities outside of their communities. Despite their suspicions, however, Myconid are a thoughtful race willing to give shelter or allow passage through their colonies to those who would approach with peaceful intentions.
Okay.
So Any questions so far?
Tell me more about mushroom people.
I will. So the life of a myconid or a fungus man is very simple. It consists of a strict schedule split evenly between sleep, working, and melding. Melding is the core of myconid society and indeed in being a myconid at all, with separation from the process viewed as frightening and a pitiful fate. I will explain melding in detail later, but for now it is essentially a communal bonding of consciousness between myconids. One of the reasons violence and disharmony is practically unheard of within myconid society is that it adversely impacts the melding process, which is a terrible thing in the mind of a myconid.
Okay.
So the actual ethical concerns or moral quandaries are subjects in which fungus folk show relative naivety and apathy. They're not really interested in the ethical part of not liking the fight. They just think it sucks.
Okay. So they're every once in a while, they're just trying to like become one for a second and then they're good.
Kinda. It's,
we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a bit more. Okay. But yeah, basically. Again, they're nonviolent, but they're not good creatures. They're also very incessant about most things. So rather than dwell upon the past or fret about the future, myconids focus on present circumstances, reveling in the moment and sharing in simple pleasures.
Okay.
Yeah. Although myconids have a very communal lifestyle, lack of eternal conflict and bond regularly in collective consciousness, each myconid is still a distinct individual with their own hopes, dreams, insights, fears, and personality traits.
Okay.
So they're super, super communal and they seem almost like they're like, they function like a colony, like a single-minded colony.
Like a mind hive.
But they're not.
But they're good.
But they're
separate.
Not. They're separate they love, individuals. They but they love to, not being separate.
Okay. But only sometimes.
But like in the melding process, like they still all retain their identity. They just all bond on like a spiritual level.
They just like rub their souls together for a little while.
I guess so. Yes.
Okay, sure.
So, before I can explain myconid's social structure, I need to explain their life cycle first.
Okay.
And melding second. So myconids grow up in six stages that progress every 4 years and their lives end sometime around their 24th year of life.
Oh.
They're short lives. When first spawned, myconid infants are only a few inches tall and resemble large mushrooms.
Little babies.
They lack any method of ambulation and furthermore are not self-aware. They're mushrooms. They're just mushrooms at this stage. Like, they're not like mushrooms. They are mushrooms.
They just are mushrooms.
They just are mushrooms at this stage. 4 years of growth later, myconids are dubbed sprouts or junior workers and are at this point fully capable of movement. At 8 years old, myconids gain the ability to reproduce at will via spores. 12-year-olds develop what are called rapport spores. These are spores that they can emit to telepathically communicate with others of their kind and any creatures capable of speech.
Is it weird for them? Is it like puberty? They're getting like,
I guess so.
Mushroom acne.
Like, to start going up.
I'm psychic. That was just so awkward. I can't control my thoughts.
I mean, maybe I can see it like that. So,
hey, bro, you were being psychic in your sleep again. Like, no.
I can't control it. At 16, myconids develop pacifying spores, a self-defense mechanism capable of stunning other creatures. By the time they are 20, myconids undergo a great change in size, becoming much larger and able to prompt hallucinatory effects that are used in melding as circle leaders. So the circle leaders, they're out here. They're just kind of doing drugs. It's just what they're doing.
Eat a piece of my skin. Yeah.
Well, it's spores.
Let's go to space.
Anyways.
Let's go talk to the galactic spirit.
Those who managed. Don't drop your SuperQuest saga Easter egg in here.
I can't help it.
Those who manage to live until the age of 24 usually become sovereigns through a special regiment process that, though is very beneficial to the community as a whole, is considered a very sad event for the new sovereign who will never be able to meld with its fellow myconids again.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So, melding. Melding is a form of communal meditation that allows myconids to transcend their dull subterranean existence. The myconids' rapport spores bind the participants in a group consciousness. Hallucination spores are then used to induce a shared dream that provides entertainment and social interaction for all participating myconids. Myconids consider melding to be their purpose of existence. They use it in the pursuit of higher consciousness, collective union, and spiritual apotheosis.
I wonder if it's because only one of them wants to do drugs, but they all want to feel the drugs. You know what I mean?
I mean, maybe. I guess
so. Only one of them has to take drugs real hardcore, and so they eat a little.
Everyone else can experience it.
They like bite their fingernails or whatever, and they're like, time to go to space.
So stupid. All right, let's take a short rest.
Okay.
Hey Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
Come check out our D&D 5e actual play podcast, Super Quest Saga, the show where Will, Brian, your special guest Jake, and friend of the show Josh Freeland sit around the table and play some Dungeons & Dragons in space. It's Will's homebrew sci-fi and space opera campaign. Find it on iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
Returned.
We're back.
Indeed. And let's talk about Myconids and how they live.
Okay.
All right. So Myconids dwell together in deep and isolated caves of the Underdark, as far from other species as possible. Comprising Myconid society are groups known as circles, tight social cliques of 20 or so members. Circles contain 4 members from each of the Myconid age groups and are presided over by 4 circle leaders. Circle members are very intimate with one another as they meld regularly, although melding is not necessarily restricted between circles, so sometimes Myconids are close with Myconids from other circles.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're very clicky.
They're very clicky, yeah. A Myconid society is usually comprised of 1 to 10 circles with a minimum of at least 3, each with their own specific niche and duties. Circle duties include agriculture, exploration, construction, child rearing, hunting, although contrary to intuition, hunters amongst the Myconids are more akin to scavengers. Rather than like hunt creatures, they locate corpses to use as fertilizer or to be reanimated by the sovereign into what are called spore servants.
Oh, shoot.
Which is much like what Zuckmoy does, where she like she infects a body with mushrooms that she can then control. The sovereign of the Myconids can do the same thing, but in a less evil way, I guess. I don't know.
Mushroom zombies for neutral purposes.
Exactly. Very much so. Yeah. So, So their schedules are strictly organized into 8-hour blocks of conducting their specialized work, melding, and then sleeping before the cycle repeats the following day.
When are they fitting in the fucking trippy melding?
Well, I just said it's 8-hour blocks. So 8 hours of melding, hours of sleep.
Oh, that was the first thing. Sorry.
Yeah, 8 hours of work.
So trip on drugs, go to bed,
work.
And then do something productive.
But then do drugs right after that.
And then do
drugs. I mean, it sounds like a nice life, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a short
cool.
one. They only live 24 years. Maybe it's because of all the drugs, but.
And you're in the Underdark. It's,
that's true. But they're super isolated. So they usually don't come in contact with anybody.
They're just like on the ceiling.
Ideally. No, I don't think they can walk on the ceiling. I don't think they have a climbing speed.
Oh, that would be so cool. That's what I was picturing mostly.
No climbing speed.
Ah, dang.
Let me see. No climbing speed.
No climbing speed. Yeah. Oh, dang.
So Circles make their homes around mounds of rocks where moss is encouraged to grow that functions both as a melding area and a sleeping ground. Although some Iconid circles are known to live in hollow, self-sealing fungal houses. That sounds fun.
That sounds really cool.
Like a little like toad, like he lives in a little toad house.
Come into my fungal house.
Exactly.
Have some tea.
Indeed.
It'll make you high.
It will make you high. That is without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Every circle is tightly grouped in such a way that distress spores, which are spores that do exactly what you think they do, can reach at least one member of another circle. The presence of distress spores are the only thing capable of breaking myconids from a meld.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're in danger.
Yeah, we're in danger. Stop. Like,
Drug override.
Yeah, exactly. There's a drug that does that for people who overdose on heroin. I can't remember the name of it.
Is it called charcoal?
No, it's not called.
And I can eat a bunch of charcoal.
No, that's more for poisons in your stomach. But there, I'm sure someone will get in the comics. There's literally a drug where, like, if someone overdoses, they get them in the hospital. They can pump them with the drug, and it completely cancels out the heroin.
Doctor, this guy took too much drugs. What do we do? Get him more drugs. Hurry.
Okay, that's enough for our medical advice on the show.
Yeah.
Every Myconid community is highly organized to the point where the population is kept at a specific number at all times. And every member of the society has a purpose and a place. Sprouts, which are the babies, work as hands for their respective elders, assisting with daily chores, and responsible for releasing distress spores if hostiles approach. Normal adults of age 8 to 12 do most of the basic work and will fight alongside their superiors if danger approaches. Elder Myconids ages 12 to 16 are responsible for supervising the work of other Myconids and attempting to negotiate when faced with hostility. Okay. And fungus folk of age 16 to 20, usually the oldest and strongest of the Myconids in the community, serve as guards, protecting other members of the circle from harm. All older members of a circle are its leaders who administrate them and advise the Myconid King, one of the only two entities above them. So the duties of the King includes the creation of spore servants, essentially mushroom zombies, so that the Myconids can remain pacifistic and the mushroom zombies can take care of the guarding.
Okay, cool.
The coordination of work schedules, vigilance against potential threats, and the production of fungal brews. They make a lot of fungal brews that they drink.
I love fungal
brews.
They
really like drugs.
They really like drugs. These Myconids are literally tripping for half the day.
Yeah, half their lives.
Minus sleep.
So finally, above all others in the community is the Myconid Sovereign. To become a sovereign is the most dreadful position within the Myconid community, seen among others as practically a punishment, because the Myconid Sovereign is tasked with being objective to all circles and administrate all of their duties. They cannot become part of a circle themselves and can never again meld with those in their tribe.
It's a bummer.
So it's no more drugs for you. You have to be the responsible adult. It's like you're the designated driver.
Somebody has to make sure everybody's staying hydrated.
Right, exactly. And so it's a punishment. Poor sovereign.
Oh, man.
Befitting their fungal nature, Myconids are primarily decomposers who draw nutrients from the ground. For them, eating consists on standing in piles of compost while their bodies absorb the useful portions. Whether through accumulated skill or simply by natural aptitude, fungus folk have a vast array of knowledge about fungi, ranging from optimal growth conditions for various types, the amount an area can yield, and what can be made using them. So they're really good at growing fungus because they are fungus.
They are fungus.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't fuck with me. I know what I need.
Exactly. So fungi, they don't grow for alchemical usage, is instead grown so that they will inevitably decay and the Myconids can extract the soil nutrients.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Through a mysterious bond, Myconids can also control a wide variety of plant and fungal monsters, including shambling mounds, phantom fungi, assassin vines, and roper-like plant monsters. So they're actually pretty good at staying pacifistic if they can get a good guard system going on. Can you imagine all these things just rolling around guarding these mushroom people? They're super protected.
Just hitting you with that fucking mushroom dust.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this knowledge of fungi extends to the sovereign, who's capable of using various types of fungi in order to perform a special kind of alchemy. While capable of replicating the effects of normal potions, this fungal alchemy is also used to create special effects unlike those of run-of-the-mill alchemical concoctions.
Okay.
If a colony is predicted to need to fight, the sovereign can create special healing potions that only work on fungi, as well as hallucinatory power potions that can be stored into spider silk and used as traps on the enemy. And in times when the population is too small, they can create potions that cause accelerated aging, as well as an anointment potion that can immediately and very painfully cause an old Mycokin to transform into a Myconid king.
Oh, shit.
So, like, they can do some crazy voodoo with their drugs.
This sounds cool for a party to roll up on some bad guys, escape the bad guys, find the Mycokins that are like, we're getting ready for fucking war.
Right, exactly.
Fuck those Kuotoa motherfuckers. Yeah, right. They've been eating us for too long.
Exactly. Yes.
Time to die. Right. You guys in? You guys in?
You guys are the least pacifistic Mycokins we've ever heard of.
No, we're going to fuck shit up today. We're going to go back to doing drugs later.
Yeah, okay. That would be fun. So Mycokins have little to no relations outside their own species. They're quick to suspect any and all flesh and blood humanoids to be hostile and violent towards them because they're usually fucking right. And they view most flesh-based people as brutish and insane, beings who would conquer and destroy anything in their path before returning to make sure it stayed vanquished. So they're used to people being violent and crazy and angry.
Yeah, especially if they're Underdark.
Yeah, which in the Underdark, it's very, very true.
Oh shit, mushroom people, time to kill everything. Right. Murder hobo their way through.
Yep. So likewise, most humanoids view the fungus ones as ugly monsters themselves, lumping them with the various evil Underdark forces. To add to further Mycokinid isolation is the fact that outside of spores that can be used in certain potions, Mycokinids possess basically no trading goods that are useful to the other races.
Yeah, they can only make stuff that works on themselves.
Exactly. And this makes it difficult to establish cooperation between them and the other races. And lastly, population pressures kind of further their paranoia and xenophobia. They have a very delicate balance. We have a very specific number of Mycokinids. We keep it that way because too many is too many.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we can't have too many, we have this specific amount that's kind of small. So right. We got to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. It sounds really cyclical.
Yeah, very cyclical. Them. Yeah, very stable, very lawful, very steady. I only got one more fact about the Mycokinids. Direct sunlight is the most dangerous thing to any Mycokinid, with direct exposure severely impairing them and even killing them after an hour or so.
Wow.
As such, the fungus folk are loath to venture anywhere above ground.
That's how you torture a Mycokinid for information. You just like sunlight. Hold them above.
Well, you cast a sunlight spell.
Oh, ooh, dang. Super, brutal. Super strong inside the Underdark.
Yep. It really is. Yes.
Oh, wow.
You always want to take a cleric to the Underdark.
Yeah, for sure. You need those sweet heals and that sweet, sweet sunlight.
Mm-hmm. So any questions about Mycokinids before we get into some of these stat blocks we got over here?
I want a stat block. It'll give me some insight.
Okay. So I have two stat blocks. We have the Mycokinid adult and the Mycokinid sovereign. We're going to start with the adult. So these guys aren't strong, and I don't think that's surprising. They're pacifists, and they don't like craft weapons. They don't have armor.
They don't even have the numbers to kind of deal with stuff. So
they don't really even have the numbers. So
being pacifist is the best way to stay out of trouble.
Yeah, being pacifist, hiding, and then also having slaves that will not slaves, but mushroom zombies that will serve you.
Yeah.
And also plant monsters will serve them too.
Okay.
So armor class of 12. This is a challenge rating 1/2, by the way. Hit points 22. So this is a really weak low level monster. I mean, it doesn't have its strongest stat is a 12 in constitution. Everything else is a 10. Oh no, I take it back. Wisdom is 13. So you got wisdom 13, constitution 12, and then we have 10 strength, 10 dex, 10 intelligence, and 7 charisma.
Oof.
We got two features. One's called distress spores. When a Mycokinid takes damage, all other Mycokinids within 240 feet of it can sense its pain.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. And then sun sickness. While in sunlight, the Mycokinid has disadvantage on ability checks, attack rolls, and save throws. A Mycokinid dies if it spends more than 1 hour in direct sunlight.
Okay, cool.
So, these guys got terrible stats.
They get ultra sunburned so fast. Okay.
So they have one attack. It's called Fist.
No. Why is it called that?
Because they punch. That's what they do.
You couldn't call it punch?
It should just be called punch. Because I guess it's because it's the name of the weapon. The weapon is their fist. Just like when it's a longsword attack, it's not like longsword attack. It just says longsword.
Yeah. When those douchebags are, you know, chirping my girlfriend at the bar, I'm going to, you guys better shut up or I'm going to fist you.
Anyways. 2d4 bludgeoning damage plus 2d4 poisoning damage. So they got poison on their fists.
Oh, so some people are putting madness in their fists. These guys are putting poison in their fists. Don't fight high level monsters, Mycokinids. You will not do any kind of poison effect.
They
on
have
them.
Two other actions. One's called pacifying spores, which they can do 3 times a day. The Mike can eject spores that one creature can see within 5 feet of it. The target must succeed on a DC 11 Constitution saving throw or be stunned for 1 minute. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success. So they could stun people.
Cool.
And then last one's a rapport spores. They can, it's the communication one. So a 20-foot radius of spores extends from the Myconid. These spores can go around corners and affect only creatures with an intelligence of 2 or higher that aren't undead, constructs, or elementals. Affected creatures can communicate telepathically with one another while they are within 30 feet of each other. The effect lasts for 1 hour. So this is how they talk with each other. This is how they talk with other people.
Okay.
Because they don't have mouths. They can't speak.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I left that part out.
There's no
they
mouth
don't
here.
Have mouths. Yes.
They just have to fucking rub their dust on each other.
Exactly. And then everything's okay.
This is my angry dust.
You're right.
They don't need to talk to each other. They've spent 4 hours a day talking to each other.
Yeah. So Mike and his sovereign sounds a lot bigger than it is. His only challenge rating 2. Looking at armor class 13, 60 hit points. So these guys are pretty weak too. Same features, distress spores and sun sickness. Same fist attack, except for it's just more D4s.
It's just more fists.
Yeah. They have the pacifying spores, which are the stun ones, and they have the rapport spores, which are the telepathic ones, but they have 2 extra spores. They have animating spores, which is a 3 times a day thing. The Myconid targets one corpse of a humanoid or a large or smaller beast within 5 feet of it and releases spores at the corpse. In 24 hours, the corpse rises as a spore servant. The corpse stays animated for 1d4 plus 1 weeks or until destroyed and can't be animated again this way.
Okay.
So that's how the spore servants are being made. And then the hallucination spores, which are the ones they use during melding. The Myconid ejects spores at one creature it can see within 5 feet of it. The target must succeed a DC 12 Constitution saving throw or be poisoned for 1 minute. The poison target is incapacitated while it hallucinates. So that one locks you down. Wow. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, though, ending the effect on itself on a success.
So there's only one sovereign per tribe?
Yeah, generally. Okay. And not even all tribes have a sovereign because it's such a shitty job. So
everybody wants to trip on drugs.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it's only the very oldest. So like once you reach that like 24, so you're the last year or so of your life, you might get turned into a sovereign.
Okay.
I mean,
are they rubbing? Can you imagine your party member dies, like beefs it hard in the Underdark, and you drag their body to safety out of respect, and fucking a Myconid sovereign comes up and starts like rubbing on it.
He's, oh, this is like, useful.
I was like, oh, Jerry's alive. Oh, no, he's not. Yeah,
no, he's super
not.
No,
he's not.
Jerry's super not alive.
I don't think he ever moved his arm like that, not even once.
So the Monster Manual actually has like a little template thing that you can slap onto a creature that gets turned into a spore servant.
Okay.
So the retained characteristics of the spore servant are its armor class, its hit points, its hit die, its strength, dex, and constitution.
Oh, wow.
ability scores. That's the word. Vulnerabilities, resistances, and immunity. So it keeps a lot.
Okay.
But it loses a lot too. The servant loses its original saving throw and skill bonuses, special senses, special traits. It loses any action that isn't multi-attack or a melee weapon attack that deals bludgeoning, piercing, or slashing damage. If it has an action or melee weapon attack that deals some other type of damage, it loses the ability to deal damage of that type unless the damage comes from the piece of equipment such as, so like if it's a paladin, he can't smite.
Yeah. That makes no sense.
Its type changes to a plant.
Okay.
Its alignment becomes unaligned. Its speed becomes 10 feet. Its mental ability scores are a 2 to intelligence, a 6 to wisdom, and a 1 to charisma. It gains blindsight within a radius of 30 feet.
Oh.
It becomes immune to being blinded, charmed, frightened, or paralyzed because it's essentially an undead.
Mm-hmm.
And it loses all language because it's a bunch of mushrooms. And if the servant has no other means of dealing damage, it can use its fists or limbs to make unarmed strikes. On a hit, an unarmed strike deals bludgeoning damage equal to 1d4 plus the servant's strength modifier, or if it's large, 2d4 plus the strength modifier.
So it can use fist, or it could use foot, or elbow,
yes.
Or skull.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what
you
I call it.
You have it right.
I don't call it headbutt, dry gulch, or kick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know. So, any questions about Myconids?
Weird.
They're weird guys, but I like them. I think that it was a fun read for me. I was like, these guys are interesting. They're just, I wouldn't want to hang with them really.
No.
It's interesting to know that they're down there.
Like, so like the application for this in this like newly formed idea I have about the Underdark of what it's really like. Like, I just like, you're probably walking like these vast plains and there are little Myconid colonies like as you're going by. Like, these are the Myconid fields.
Sure.
It fucking stinks out here. Just like everywhere in the Underdark. But don't unleash your own brand because you'll get fucking eaten.
Your own brand.
Locals only, bro.
All right. Well, I think you're done. So I think we're going to get ready for a long rest.
Let's get ready for the long rest. Right. William, you've caught me in my bathrobe as I... I've bathed before, before I'm to sleep, but since you're here, just allow me to start my cob pipe,
okay.
My tobacco, my pre-bed smoky. God, you'd wake up like with fucking asthma attack. We're in the long rest portion of the show.
Long rests are getting weirder.
It's like
what happened when we first started the short rest.
I need all my fucking spell slots back and all my HP.
Uh-huh.
Apparently there's lore on why you get all your HP and like injuries healed after a long rest.
It actually takes two long rests, I believe.
Oh, okay.
That might be the hit die part. Yeah. I don't remember.
Okay. We'll talk about that one day.
Yeah.
Let's fucking tell you about our stuff. Links below for merch. There's new merch or there's close to being new merch. I'm not sure yet.
And there's also old merch, which is really cool. If you want to support us, go buy some merch. It's really cool.
If you want a shirt to sport at your con season, in the thick of it, go to, it's like teespring.com/thedungeoncast or like, dude, it's right there. It's right down
it's
there.
Right
go
below.
Get it. Yes. Go get it. Go get your shirts and mugs. We have artists commissioned to like do stuff for us that we can turn into that sort of thing. And I love it. Exclusive merch like our What the Grumsh mug, you can get it on our Patreon. So go check out our Patreon too.
Yep.
Make sure you check out Super Quest Saga. I'm having trouble not talking about it.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. I just want to hit up a big thank you to everybody in our Discord. I'd like to thank you guys for all the hard work you do, as far as like our moderators and admins and stuff in Discord. We see what you're doing and we love
it. Thank you guys so much.
Love you guys. They're like doing cool stuff, like doing their own little dice giveaways and
it's
a rich community filled with nerds.
It's true. So thanks, it's very true.
Thank you, fellow Dungeons and Dragons nerds. We, thrive off your energies. Let's answer some questions.
Oh, we have questions. Oh, gosh.
We're finally going to get into a block of questions that Slash382 sent in.
Okay.
So we'll be...
He sent in a bunch.
By requests, we're going to be sprinkling them in with other people's questions. So we'll read one from Slash now.
Okay. Sounds good.
I don't think I briefed you on it, so get ready.
Okay.
And I have an answer. What is something that you learned for D&D that isn't related to D&D? It's kind of a, example, I learned about certain character tropes like the 5-man band to flesh out characters. I made statistics for dice rolls and making realistic gambling games and geology for creating maps that make sense. So what's something new you learned for D&D?
Yeah, you learn all kinds of weird shit when you're DMing.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait, how does this work? I don't know. Let me Google that. Yeah.
Footage is a huge one for me. Mm. Like what actual like 30 feet really looks like in real life.
Sure. Yeah.
That was so huge. And it like, I had to learn it for work. Like I'm always, I'm like a designer for electrical poles and stuff. I can tell what distances are just by looking at photos now.
Nice.
And like what 200 feet looks like and how that, you know, applies to mainly combat. In D&D, like knowing that and being able to apply it effectively, I think that's where I struggled the most at D&D when I first started dungeon mastering was figuring out like what distance really means in relation to the mechanics because they're specced out like that for a reason.
Right.
You know, a more realistic feel.
Yeah.
So that one was huge for me. It made me a much better dungeon master. I wouldn't know how to approach like getting used to that. Just find like... Pick a place that you are a lot and figure out the dimensions for that place and just be like, well, my room is 10 feet long. So 3 of my room is like, looks like this.
Right.
Knowing what 30 feet looks like is huge.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, just a lot of little things, most that I can't come up with off the top of my head, but like, you know, little hobbies or whatever comes up in the game. But one thing that I've learned more so from the show than from D&D is just history, because like so many of the monsters from D&D are based off something historical. And so that sends me down the research rabbit hole of like the historical relevancy to, to Dungeons & Dragons. And that's always been really interesting because I'm big on history. I love history.
The Greco cast.
Yeah, the Greco cast. And then also... one thing from D&D is like how governing bodies work. Cause I like,
that's a big one.
Yeah. I don't want every single town and community to like be ran the same. So I'm like, well, what kind of different like bodies of governing are there. And so I've done a lot of research on that for purposes of running games. So
yeah, you learn a lot about waste management.
Sure.
You just do.
Yeah.
In the bigger cities. That has to exist or you get plagues. So it's let's go. Let's answer one from Jeremy Miller.
Okay.
Will you guys do a review of Explorer's Guide to Wildemount when it comes out? Maybe. Knowing neither of you are fans of Crit Roll, it'll be interesting to get your opinion on the content found in it.
We did that maybe
for Xanathar's, and didn't we do it for Mordekainen's also, kind
we
of?
We did, but those
were
more...
I don't know if I like those episodes, really.
Yeah, I mean, we
might... I mean, they're fine. They're good. They're like, I don't know, it breaks the style of what we do.
Oh, it definitely does. And we might. I think it's way more likely that we will do episodes on things within the book, so I'm pretty sure there's going to be a class in there. Going to do a class breakdown.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, if there's any custom races, we'll do them. If there's custom gods, we might do them too. Like, I'll look over the book. I really don't know what to expect because, again, I've watched one Critical Role episode and I only watched half of it. And it was cool. It just wasn't for me. So I don't know much about the setting, so I really don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like going to be tons of tidbits in there. Like the gunslinger is probably going to be in there and all that stuff. Yeah. And that's super popular. Mm-hmm. I mean, people really want to get into that. I think even special guest Jake was talking about like messing around with the character that's doing that. You know?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
People that love Crit Roll want to do the stuff in Crit Roll at their own table, and that's totally fine.
I mean, that's what the book's for.
Yeah, so that's what the book is for.
Exactly.
So yeah, like Will said, we probably won't do a whole episode on it because I don't think we want to do like a episode about a book. That's not really what the channel and the podcast is essentially about, even though we gave it a shot.
Yeah.
But we will crack the book and we'll tell you explicitly at the beginning of those episodes.
I definitely will be reading most of the book. Like I like to look at every D&D book. So I will have an opinion on it, I'm sure.
You know, there's another D&D book and I think it was a Magic the Gathering setting is what it ended up being.
The Ravnica one, yeah.
Well, no. It's that new release that's coming out. Do you remember we were talking about it after Super Talk Saga? It was like... There's like a weird bird-like creature on the front and a dude with like a sword and shield and like a parallel universe in the background or some shit.
Oh, wasn't it like a Greek thing?
It looked Greek a little bit, but I think it's a Magic the Gathering setting from what I've been reading. Okay. So we got another book coming out.
Okay, that's cool. That's pretty cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm always excited for these books because there's usually new races and classes. I'm like, oh, new episodes.
New playable content. Yeah, exactly. Stuff people want to know about. So yeah, that's kind of how we'll approach it. So with that, I think we're good.
Yeah, we're going to call it a game.
Let's call it a game.
Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.